Hello, everyone. Welcome. I'm Carrie L., and this is Carrie L.'s Heartling Show. And as I connect to as many hearts as possible, we are creating more freedom and light and love, one interview at a time. I'll be conducting programs that will bring you insights into the great awakening that is underway on planet Earth as we approach 2012. I'll keep you abreast of the latest tools available for anchoring a greater and healthier reality into your life. I'll be interviewing leading-edge experts in the metaphysical, scientific, paranormal, and spiritual realms. Stay tuned for the next hour as I speak with Alfred Weber, who is in the forefront of promoting open extraterrestrial contact in citizen diplomacy and ability to take Earth off the quarantine list. And we'll learn all about that in a few moments. So stay tuned. But first, I just want to introduce myself. I'm Carrie L. Quinley, and I am a life coach, a therapist, and an educator. And I have a wonderful website I'd love for you to explore. Lots of articles on the Great Awakening. It's called HeartLinkInstitute.com. That's www.heartlinkinstitute.com. And we are going to have an exciting workshop coming up in a few weeks in July on the 26th and 27th. It's called Blueprinting Your Life. And we're going to be exploring going beyond old beliefs and old thoughts and perceptions, and it, bringing in your authentic self so you can truly know what it is that you've come here to create. And I do all sorts of classes online, but if you can come to that workshop, if you're in the Oceanside, California area, please do show up for that. We'll be exploring keys to empowerment, I call it. So. And also my Crop Circle cards, which is a very special oracle deck that I created way back in the 90s. And I've been leading groups to explore the crop circles in England and then put together this wonderful oracle using 64 of the designs. They're powerful, and they really do speak to your higher self. So do check that out. And now I'd like to introduce my guest, Alfred Weber, who is an author, futurist, international lawyer, peace advocate, international activist, space activist, and radio talk show host himself. And he has a degree in both law and in counseling. And he can be regarded as the founding father of exopolitics. And we're going to inquire about that. And he's written a book called Exopolitics, Politics, Government, and Law in the Universe, which I'm all excited about. And so welcome, Alfred Weber.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm very happy to be here. And I was very struck by your words referring to the Great Awakening that's happening on the planet now.
Yes. I know you're very much into the current cycle of energy that's going on, and you're right in the midst of it with exopolitics, and this is a cutting-edge science. I'd love for you to tell us more about it, would you?
Sure. The term exopolitics, what it is, it's really the new political science of outer space, mm-hmm. and it's the science of relations between our human civilization and other intelligent civilizations in the multiverse. And I use that term because there are many, many, as we know, parallel universes, and we're just beginning to understand now the nature of the complex reality that we live in. And so exopolitics is this emerging science, and it first came onto the scene in the year 2000, and was in January of 2006, the Associated Press reported that exopolitics was actually nominated for Word of the Year of 2005. Hmm. And if you look at sort of the pace of what we can call public disclosure or interface between our terrestrial society and various aspects of extraterrestrial society. It's with the turn of the century, from 2000 and forward, the year 2000 forward, when Exopolitics was first published, that this pace really starts to pick up. And we had, in the year 2001, the Disclosure Project, where 100 or so witnesses in Washington, D.C., under the directorship of Dr. Stephen Greer, I myself and my co-director of the Institute for Cooperation in Space, Dr. Kyle Rosen, we were both witnesses at the Disclosure Project. Myself, in my role as a director of a proposed extraterrestrial communication study at the Jimmy Carter White House back in 1977. If we begin to move forward beyond the year 2001, as we move forward into 2002, 2003, 2004, various nations, first with the South American nations, Brazil, Mexico, Chile, Peru, then other countries start to make their extraterrestrial or UFO files public. Finally, in September of 2005, major figures such as the former Minister of Defense and acting Prime Minister of Canada, the Honorable Paul Hillier, made a speech in which he came forward and said that he had to come forward because the U.S. Space Command apparently was planning to start an interstellar war with friendly, ethical, extraterrestrial civilizations who were here visiting us at this time for the purposes of helping uplift our civilization, not to subjugate it or attack us. And he really felt the necessity of coming out, and he was one of the first persons to come out publicly in support of exopolitics and of space preservation treaty to ban all weapons in space. And then in 2006 and 2007, well, we have France coming forward. A few months later, in May of 2007, England, a whole other countries coming forward in what I call disclosure management. So, in a way, exopolitics has functioned as what I like to call the yam that the 100 monkeys kind of wash. You know, there's that tale that if one monkey on an island starts washing his or her yam and then other monkeys start washing it, well, pretty soon all the monkeys in all whole archipelago of islands will start doing that, and it starts changing a whole paradigm of how monkeys relate to their food. And exopolitics seems to have had the same sort of function, and it's part of, I think, referring back to how we opened the show, Cariel, when you referred to the Great Awakening, that exopolitics may have a role in helping, sort of as a concept that provides an interface whereby we humans and human society can begin to think about interfacing with extraterrestrial civilizations. It's through exopolitics. It's how our civilization can begin to think about interfacing with another civilization when we realize that we're all in the same universe and we all are intelligent, evolving civilizations operating under universal law with some form of governance systems and mediated by universe politics. And it's just that we here on Earth are just now becoming conscious of our being in this populated universe. So that's kind of a dynamic picture of what's really happened since the year 2000, when exopolitics kind of made its appearance on the scene.
Mm-hmm. Wow. We have come a long way, and it's about time, actually, isn't it, given that we've had contact for so many centuries, actually. But it just seems like our consciousness is ready for it now. And boy, I was doing night watches way back in the early 90s, so many of us has been opening to the whole idea of what it would be like. You mentioned in your book, Exopolitics, the Politics, Government, and Law of the Universe. What a great title. You talk about the quarantine that has been going on. Tell us, why would we be quarantined?
Yeah, well, these are very deep questions of our condition here on planet Earth, and about which we have just the sketchiest idea. We're just now becoming into barely noticing that we're in a populated universe. Well, what's the backstory to it?
Yeah, exactly. You know?
So exopolitics is not only about the future, but it's about the nature of our reality and
a historical perspective.
Yeah,
sure.
And so what has gone on? What is our true history here?
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that we cannot know overnight.
Mm-hmm.
And part of a programmatic aspect, so what we call an exopolitics platform that we propose, is a concept that we call a decade of contact.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that we officially set out a 10-year period in which the world, you know, we've been under a 60-year or more extraterrestrial embargo, and who knows how long of a quarantine. Well, let's take 10 years in which we have acknowledgement that we live in a populated universe. We have public funds devoted toward curriculum development, scientific research, community activities. Our grade school textbooks and our kindergartens are being taught that, hey, all intelligent life ends at the geostationary orbit. All of that is wrong, so we have to develop a totally different culture.
Many of my listeners have had this open contact for at least a decade, if not more.
Right.
But what you're saying, you're calling for the government official sort of thing.
Yes, yes, where this becomes part of the mainstream culture and the accepted story of what happens here on this planet.
Part of that would be the lesson on how not to go to war.
Right.
Then become a peaceful planet and to then be allowed into the rest of the universe. The quarantine,
yes,
being because we are a warring planet right now. Government officials are warring people. So even though the rest of us aren't, it is kind of interesting how to break out of that. Will the government leaders go easily into that, or seems to me like we've been in a battle?
We're dealing with very deep issues here.
Very deep.
Just to answer your question, if we look at the quarantine, some of the preliminary exopolitical research indicate that this quadrant of our galaxy in the contiguous solar systems around us have been the victim of what we could call a galactic civil war sometime in the distant past. And we can look at allegories of this, for example, in some of our sacred texts. If we look at the book of Genesis, for example, the whole Adam and Eve, Garden of Eden allegory can be an allegory for just that galactic civil war episode. If we take the Adam and Eve figure as representatives of the galactic governance bodies that were here on the planet in a previous epoch, the kind of Lucifer-Satan figures as the rebel leaders rebelled against the galactic governance and led to the quarantine of this planet and, as we understand it, other contiguous planet, so that the quarantine of this planet has been ongoing for some time. We don't know yet, because our science has not been devoted and our public funding has not been devoted to discovering what our true historical circumstances are. It could be a couple of 100,000 years, it could be more. And so we're dealing with fairly long-term circumstances. Well, now we're also dealing with the end of the permanent war economy.
Let's hope.
Yeah, with the explosion of the nuclear weapons, the atomic bombs in World War II, that was a signal, apparently. Following that, in the early 1950s, there are reports, and these are witnessed by multiple witnesses, that ambassadors from ethical extraterrestrial civilizations may have met with President Dwight D. Eisenhower of the U.S. One reported meeting was on February 20th, 21st, 1954, at Edwards Air Force Base, and asked him to stop the U.S. nuclear weapons program. And the reason for that is that nuclear weapons not only destroy the Earth's biosphere and destroy humanity and the DNA of all living things on this planet, but they also intersect into and destroy life in the parallel dimension that we're a part, in the dimensional ecology of which we're a part.
Mm-hmm. These were the Nordics that came and warned us of the awful results of hydrogen bomb testing.
Yes, yes. The U.S. responded 9 days later with the Bravo test of a 15-megaton hydrogen bomb.
Mm-hmm.
So for the last 60 years, we've been in a...
a lockdown.
Yes, and this is what exopolitics is all about.
And this takes us to my next question. Drives to our audience how the Eisenhower administration that got hijacked by this group of humans.
Yes. Well, again, we don't know fully what the terrain is of the history. We know more and more through exopolitical research. I just want to draw the attention of your listeners to an event that was just announced this week, which exopolitics.com and Exopolitics Radio are sponsors of, and that's Galactic Freedom Day. And that is on August 8th, 2008, 888. And the motto of Galactic Freedom Day is all secret agreements are void.
They were kind of void at the time in terms of the ethical extraterrestrials and unethical humans at the time.
It just didn't seem to work out at all.
It pretty much, like I say, the government got hijacked by this group of people, and you talk about them in your book.
Yes.
You name names.
Right. If we go back to the late 1940s and the early 1950s, we have on this planet what I call an international war crimes racketeering organization. And they have been called by many, many different names, but in the law, they really are like a racketeering organization, like a criminal gang, and they can be prosecuted under the law for acts that are those of a racketeering gang. And these are the forces that keep the permanent war economy going and keep 99% of humanity held hostage here and prevent humanity from linking up with the rest of galactic universe.
Who are some of those people, those racketeers?
Sure. If we look at, in North America, the International War Crimes Racketeering Organization, the main components are the Rockefeller Group of corporate interests and organizations. Many of your listeners have heard of their fronts, ranging from the Trilateral Commission, which is a front of corporate and governmental interests that join Europe with North America, with Japan. In North America, there is also the Brotherhood of Death, and these are the secret networks coming out of an organization where I... went to university, I went to law school, and I taught there, and that's Yale University, and
mm-hmm.
there's an organization whose secret name is the Brotherhood of Death, but it's known as Skull and Bones.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a, Skull and Bones was founded in 1832, and the founders of Skull and Bones were chartered by a secret satanic organization in Germany at a German university in 1832, and the founders of Skull and Bones went on to charter the first clipper ship to export the opium from India into China as part of the China drug wars, and that is to get China hooked on drugs and to really bring down the Chinese empire, and that was the beginning of the U.S. permanent war economy, which has been based on three things. Number one, arms, drugs, and oil. And all of that comes out of the Brotherhood of Death, which is Skull and Bones. And the Brotherhood of Death and the Rockefeller interests, whose net worth have been estimated at $10 trillion, are interrelated. And their spokes go out into the CIA, for example, which is a governmental manifestation of the Rockefeller interests. And from the early 1940s forward, the entire extraterrestrial issue was privatized in the Rockefeller camp and managed by their charge d'affaires, Henry Kissinger, through various groups, the PI-40 group, Majestic 12, and other groups that, in effect, cut the entire constitutional order out and took advanced technologies from very specific extraterrestrial civilizations like the Short Greys, who come out of Orion, and who made deals with the U.S. military intelligence and with the Rockefeller interests to transfer very specific technologies like time travel teleportation, which has given a tremendous advantage to the permanent war economy and made the U.S. the predominant military empire in return for the Greys allowed to do genetic farming. So it's this sort of secret agreement that now we individual humans can stand up and reclaim our sovereignty. And if your listeners want to go to our website, which is www.exopolitics.com, they can go there and sign the Declaration for Galactic Freedom also.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are sort of the forces. Now, that's just the North American branch of the International War Crimes Racketeering Organization. If you go to the UK, the principal actors there are the City of London. That's a 677-acre jurisdiction, quasi-independent jurisdiction at the heart of London. It corresponds to the old Roman walls at the center of London. It's ruled over by a committee of 12 banks, headed up by the Bank of England, but mediated by the House of Rothschild, whose net worth is estimated at $100 trillion, and whose agenda is Zionist, which is a political term. It's not a religious term. Additionally, out of the City of London and these Zionist circles, go satanic Masonic networks into the royal family of Britain, into politics, military, finance, all of the principal branches in England. Jumping over to the continent, the International War Crimes Racketeering Organization is centered in what we can call the black nobility of Europe. At the center of that is probably the Knights Malta, the Vatican, including the Pope, the Cardinals, many of the houses of Europe, Prince Bernard of Holland when he was alive. These were the founders of the Bilderberger Group, who have been principals behind the extraterrestrial embargo, and also behind a deliberate policy of mass genocide, of depopulation of the earth that was put into effect first in 1954. It was in 1954 was the first Bilderberger meeting, and that was the year that the Nordic ambassadors met with Eisenhower, where he turned them down to go ahead with the nuclear agenda. Well, that agenda is a Zionist agenda coming out of the City of London to depopulate humanity using a variety of tools ranging from nuclear weapons to depleted uranium, now with a mega weapon called HAARP, which is a space-based weapon of mass destruction used both against ethical extraterrestrials and as an environmental weapon. For example, both the Myanmar cyclone of May 3rd, 2008 and the China earthquake of May 12th where the combined death toll was greater than the death toll at Hiroshima after the atomic bomb, were actually environmental warfare attacks using the space-based, ionosphere-based HAARP environmental weapon in tectonic warfare and in weather warfare. All of this is part of what this satanic elite is doing, and they are remnants, actually, from what we can call the Lucifer Rebellion, which was this civil war that we had 200,000-300,000 years ago with the overthrow of the galactic government here. So that's how all of this goes.
This is multidimensional,
isn't it? Yeah, yeah, it is.
Yeah, yeah. And it's certainly psychopathic behavior on the human's part.
It's cosmic lunacy on the part of the permanent war economy. And those actors that have chosen consciously to participate in war, death,
of their own kind. That's about the most horrific kind of...
Well,
They don't treat us as people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For example, Richard B. Cheney was in the class ahead of me at Yale, and he flunked out as a sophomore. George W. Bush was a couple of classes behind me. They were both sociopaths while they were at Yale. George W. Bush was almost kicked out because he branded the incoming pledges in his fraternity with hot hanging irons. So you're dealing with psychopathic personalities, and you're dealing with this culture of psychopathy, and you're dealing with complex forces. For example, after World War II, through Operation Paperclip, all of the Nazi technology for mind control and, you know, massive genocide was transferred over to the U.S. So, in essence, the U.S. is now an occupied Zionist country. It's not really its own nation. Its very constitutional order has been destroyed. And I say that as someone who's taught constitutional law at the University of Texas. So we're dealing with deep cosmic dramas. Now, having said that, this is where I think exopolitics comes on the scene as what I call a survival science. And that is, exopolitics provides the path toward a positive human future.
And to thrive, too, not just to survive.
Yeah.
We haven't
right.
been surviving or thriving.
Yeah. I like to call it the ABC future. And if you'd A for Armageddon, we know as futurists that we can choose whatever future we want.
Mm-hmm.
So we have three possible paths, just to kind of set up three alternative future scenarios, which is a classic futurist technique. If we look at A for Armageddon, well, that's what there is enormous public expenditure in ensuring that we're headed toward self-annihilation. I mean, the trillions of dollars that are invested in self-annihilation now are enormous. And that are calculated toward self-annihilation. If you look at just the HAARP and chemtrails, space-based environmental weapon of mass destruction, that is calculated together with the toxicity of foods. I mean, right now, HAARP has been used, for example, most plausibly to inundate the entire corn crop of the U.S. through massive flooding of Iowa, so that you're going to have increased food shortages coming in into 2009. In the Myanmar cyclone, that environmental attack was made in the week before the Myanmar rice harvest, which was calculated to be, according to U.S. Department of Agriculture figures, twice as large as the U.S. rice harvest, which is one of the largest in the world. It's as though we have this artificial intelligence demon or robot, you know, which has taken over our planet and turned it into a Death Star and attempting to annihilate the biosphere and the human race except for a chosen elite.
What is Plan B? I don't like the A.
Oh, okay, so that's A. Now, B is to be or not to be, right? And that is, that's the depopulation scenario. Mm. And that is that we have an elite which has used the U.S. budget. I mean, you can find a line item where AIDS was developed at Fort Detrick, Maryland, using U.S. taxpayer funds as a bioweapon. And it was released in Africa by U.S. Rangers undercover in vaccines against smallpox in order to depopulate southern Africa of the blacks under orders from the Bilderberger Group and the Zionists of the city of London. And all of that can be proved. Mm-hmm. Now, that's the sort of racial extermination which has been going on this planet for the last 60 years under orders of the International War Crimes Racketeering Organization.
So they can take over their natural resources, in other words.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And under a population of 500 million people with a ruling elite and, enough kind of compliant servant type.
Well, I'm aware we only have a very short time left. Let's get to C, and let's hope that's a good one.
Okay. Now the C future is what I call the SEE future. It's the C future. It's the exopolitical future. It's the awakening future. What happens when you awaken? Well, you see. You awaken, and you see, and you begin through the exopolitical model, you understand that we live in a highly populated universe with intelligent, evolving civilizations under universal law mediated by universe politics, and that we on Earth are becoming aware of this, and that there is a humongous higher plan, which is now, in effect, involving the integrated resources of ethical, upper-dimensional, extraterrestrial civilizations who are aiding planet Earth to find its new home in extraterrestrial civilization, and that those of us here on the planet, you know, many of us are starseeds, many of us are indigos, many of us have advanced and enhanced capacities, and we are now out there, and because of the changing energy field, the entire capacities of the whole human race are being enhanced, and a new human is evolving. We can call it Homo Universalis. Right as you think that this that this planet is a death star, no, guess what? It's a light star, and it's a life star. And what we thought was the death star is just the placenta previa, which is falling off. So 10 years from now, we're going to be living on a beautiful, pristine planet that's in the fifth dimension, which is where we are now as we talk to each other, in a state of joy and ecstasy and peace.
So our place in the universe, you're saying, is a sacred place, and we're going to that fifth dimension.
Yes. Well, we are in that fifth. The planet is in that fifth.
As we speak.
Yes.
Explain what you mean. I mean, I'm used to this kind of language, but maybe some people out in the audience haven't got a clue.
Sure. We began to isolate what are the crucial elements to a positive human future. And we began to isolate three sort of crucial elements. One was what we called exopolitics, and that is an awareness that we live in a populated universe, that the game is much larger than just planet Earth. The second is the whole concept of free energy, and that is getting beyond petroleum and nuclear and getting to be able to tap the limitless energy that exists in the vacuums of space, which is what advanced civilizations do.
Nuclear energy is totally insane.
No, right. So totally.
It's so destructive.
Yeah. It's what we call Zionist science. And the final element is consciousness. That's the final element. And consciousness is really the most crucial of the three. And third dimensional consciousness is the consciousness that, hey, there's time, there's space, and there's distance, and it's kind of the consciousness of the 19th century. You got on a train, and it got you someplace, and you hit a baseball with a bat, and the ball goes over the fence. And you meet somebody on a street corner, and you tell them, I'll see you at the baseball game in 2 days, and that's where you're going to see them. I.e., everything is sight and sound, and it's kind of a Newtonian
linear
universe.
Thinking.
You know, mm-hmm. Everything is like a 1930s motion picture.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah.
And that's what we call the consensual trance. Now, a fifth dimensional world, and we sort of take that from, there's all these things about the fifth world and the Hopi prophecies. Another word for that is multidimensional consciousness. And that is having the consciousness that we as beings exist in multiple dimensions. And that requires a lot of sophisticated equipment just to be able to maintain that consciousness. And that sophisticated equipment goes way beyond the human brain. It includes the locus of the human mind. Now, you might say that the locus of the human mind is way beyond the human brain. We have the human body is a complex mechanism. And like the iceberg, its components are largely unseen. There are fine energy bodies that are part of the human body. And the mind resides in some of these finer energy bodies, including what we call the aura, including what we call the astral body, which have, in turn, different sorts of valves that relate to universal energy circuits known as chakras. And these relate in turn to our DNA. And as we evolve, and we're in a very rapid phase of evolution now because we have to avoid what a very interesting mentor of mine once called an evolutionary cul-de-sac. That was Gregory Bateson, Margaret Mead's one-time husband. In order to do that, the larger human body, all of its chakras, its full DNA, its full astral bodies, develops more chakras, more than the seven. It develops 12 to 14 chakras. Mm-hmm. So it can really scan a lot of universal circuits and a lot of dimensions. And the DNA develops more than two strands. It develops many, many strands, and we begin to use more than 3% of our DNA. What the scientists now, we only use 3% of our DNA, and the conventional science says, that's junk DNA. It's not junk DNA. It's extraterrestrial DNA. It just hasn't been activated yet. So we are operating at an infinitesimal part of our full potential.
Mm-hmm.
And now more of our potential as beings is being activated scientifically through these various component parts. As that happens, our ability to actually process and understand, to information process and comprehend the full reality in which we're immersed expands.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we call multidimensional consciousness.
Yeah.
Because we will understand that we're in this expanded reality and that time goes backwards and forwards, that we're existing in multiple places, and that there are multiple meanings, and that we have archetypal beings inside of us, we have personality beings inside of us, and that everybody we meet, there's a multiple meaning to that. You know, we've met under karmic circumstances, we meet as personalities in this life, you know, the more that we become conscious, then we come into a world that throws off this narrow cloak of war, disease, crime, and poverty that the Zionist conspiracy has placed on it, and the consensual trance, or what we call the matrix, an artificial intelligence that's keeping us in a prison, and we break out of that prison. So that's what we mean by multidimensional consciousness.
And wonderfully said, Alfred. Boy, I can understand that you do have a degree in counseling and really grasp the, you know, consciousness very well. And, you know, because I teach all of this information, and I would like to take a moment to speak a little bit about the other civilizations that you see us making contact with, and hopefully very shortly, in terms of what's coming on the scene, I guess, on the level where we're at, and I guess, you know, we're going to build towards, you know, the higher dimensions. But right now, what do you foresee in the near future?
Whoa.
Well, is Mars on the near future, I guess? Is that
right,
the horizon?
Oh, that's a key question, because right now we're sort of trapped inside of the matrix, that is, from a societal viewpoint.
Some of us, like I say, have made contact for a long time.
Oh, sure.
We're quite aware that we're being helped.
Right.
And telepathically we're communicating. So, and I do teach that for people, because I do think that that's a major leading edge way to go right now.
Yes. Yes. And so my feeling is this, that society is going to change from the inside out, and that it's going to be a slow process of 10 to 20 years. That's why I call it the decade of contact, because it takes that long. And right now, all of our public resources are dedicated to making war and destroying people. And
we have 1 minute left, Alfred. How do you want to end it on?
Oh, well, look, my essential message is that exopolitics leads us to a positive future. And I really urge people to learn more and to begin to reach out to interactively to extraterrestrial civilizations, but to ground it in our current politics. And you can learn more by keeping in touch with exopolitics.com.
Wonderful. Is there anything coming in the near future that you want to announce? Or are you going to be at any conferences?
Well, yes. I'm going to be speaking in the States on the weekend of July 4th at the ESETI conference at Trout Lake, Washington, for 2 days.
James Gilliland is up there.
Yes, yes. And that's very exciting, because it's not in a hotel. I've spoken there before. You're actually at the foot of Mount Adams. And every night, I mean, these amazing light ships come in. Last year there was a mothership that came in and was photographed. James told me just a couple of days ago that they're a large triangular ship. And these have been witnessed by thousands of witnesses, high-level engineers from Boeing, fully photographed. So that is an opening. So part of the conference is that we have open interaction with upper-dimensional extraterrestrials.
Excellent. I want to join you guys.
Join us. It's July 4th weekend. Just go to exopolitics.com or eseti.org. It's great fun.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Alfred. People, you've been listening to Alfred Weber of exopolitics and fascinating information. And I'll have to have you back on the show, Alfred.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, thank you, Cariel.
And you've been listening to Cariel's Heartlink Show. I'm so glad that we've been able to connect and broaden our horizons towards more freedom, light, and love. And check out my website at heartlinkinstitute.com. And I want to thank BBS Radio for making this show possible. And next time on our show, and that will be just next week, we'll have Dr. Bruce Lipton. And he'll be talking about the biology of belief. And we'll go into depth about the DNA. So, again, thank you all for listening, and have a great evening. Bye-bye.